A mother's work is next.
Coming up on Broadway Radio, we talk with It Should Have Been You writer Brian Hargrove and star Lisa Howard.
Left to run, and Devin has to do my hair. Seating chart, what was I thinking? Keep an eye on Sheila's drinking. Worrying's okay. My baby's getting married on this day. I'm gonna go check on your sister.
Why don't you call Rebecca first? Give her a chance to run away.
Hello and welcome to Broadway Radio. It's This Week on Broadway for Sunday, August 9th, 2015. My name is James Marino, and on today's show, we're going to focus on It Should Have Been You, the Broadway show. We have two interviews. One is with the writer, Brian Hargrove, and with the star, Lisa Howard. As listeners may know, we are big fans of the show It Should Have Been You. The original Broadway cast recording is going to be released on August 21st, digitally. That means iTunes, Amazon, various different places like that you can get it. And then the physical release, which will be in stores and as well as Amazon and other types of online outlets, will be on October 9th. Peter, Carrie, and I will be back next week to talk about Hamilton. Michael will come back the following week.
Ready for our big day?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Good. And remember, we're all having our hair done at 10. I tell what's his name. It's bad luck to see the bride before the ceremony.
My mother's psychic.
Your mother's psycho.
With us today, we have a very special guest. Brian Hargrove is with us. Broadway fans will know Brian as the book and lyrics writer of the musical It Should Have Been You. And Brian, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And I know that this week is a tough week for you because your show is closing on Broadway and your cast recording is just about to come out. So, and I have to tell you, as listeners to this show will attest, we are huge fans of this show, and I don't understand why it's closing, but you know, these things happen on Broadway. So thanks for coming and talking with us.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I had a funny experience two nights ago with one of the ushers in the theater, the ushers, by the way, are fantastic. And Susan, the house manager, she's just been great for us. We could have had a better time with the book accidents. But anyway, this was a new usher, and she didn't recognize me. And I was standing next to her at the end of the show, and she was saying, oh, I just don't know why the show is closing. People just love it. And I said, I know. I don't either. It's just that no one has a bad time. Everybody walking out loves it. And they all say they get to tell their friends and everything. And I said, I don't either. I don't know what happened. She said, well, you know, I just think what happened was that they didn't sell enough tickets.
Yeah. That's the understatement of the century.
I went, okay, there you go. That's the nutshell.
We've boiled it down. You know, it's really funny. Yep. Peter Felicia, who is one of our co-hosts here on the radio show, you know, when we were talking about it, we said we haven't been able to find one person, not one person who has actually seen the show that has said anything negative about it. It was, the problem was getting the people through the door. And I, you know, and that's a failure of marketing more than anything else, because everybody who's seen it has loved it. And we're big fans here, but it's been a multi-year process for you. I watched a video of you and David being interviewed at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And,
all right.
And you guys were talking about this back in 2011, and you've had a few productions.
Yeah, and I was 20 pounds heavier, so there.
You see? Good things have happened in the last couple of years.
Some good things have happened, yeah. You know, we did. We were 2011, and of course, you know, have you talked to Barbara yet? I'm not sure if you're
going to. No, I haven't talked to Barbara.
Talk to her. Okay, because she'd been, she can tell you all about it. I can tell you if you want me to, but she can tell you all about how the show got started and how it started as part of the BMI workshop as her second year project. She wanted to do a show about people at a wedding who were not the bride and groom. And she didn't really have a story. She just wanted to do I guess, a song cycle of people at a wedding. So she has been working on it for like 9 years. And I came in about 7 or 8 years ago, and then took a couple of years to write. So, and then David came on. I don't know how much people know about the story, but we originally had a different director, Oh, sorry, my dog's barking.
That's
I knew
okay.
that was going to happen.
That's okay.
at least you know this is live, right? Casey Niccolo was originally directing it,
really?
And then he got this little show called Book of Mormon, and decided that he didn't. He really, and then he had a bunch of other projects coming up right on the tail of all of it, so he had to drop out. And that was when David said, "You know, I've been watching this musical. I love the writing, and I've been to every single reading, obviously, and I would love to direct it." And the producers loved that idea, needless to say. And Dave and I had worked together before on television. He had been guest star for a few of the television shows I'd written on, and one that I created, which was called Titus, which was on Fox.
Mm-hmm.
I co-created with my ex-writing partner Jack Canning. By the way, I never mention it without giving him credit because he mm-hmm. gets half credit anyway. Anyway, he said he wanted to direct it, and they jumped all over it, and they loved it, and that was when he came on board. And I guess 2011 is about right. That's a.
And can I jump in here for a second?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
When I watched the video down in North Carolina Chapel Hill, David had. I think he mentioned in the video he had never directed before. This was his first direction thing in 2011. Is that correct? Did I have the facts there?
That is correct. He had never directed before.
Which is shocking to me because he seems so natural to it.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a man of the theater, and he is a fantastic director. And it's funny, I can tell you some of the tales out of school, which is often when he would work with big directors like Mike Nichols and other directors like that, they would say, you know, you should try directing. You have a director's eye. Because David is a fantastic actor, and nobody wants him to stop acting. I certainly don't, and I know most people don't. But the thing he does is he sees the whole picture when he does any project. And I think that's what a director does. They can see not just their parts, but how their parts fit into the whole. And I think that's something that's the thing that caught their eye and the thing that makes him a great director. And then one of the reasons he was so great on our show is that he's been part of it, not necessarily part of the creative part until he came on board as director, but watching it and seeing how it's changed. And, you know, and frankly, you know, I go to him, ask him to read things, and he is my best critic or worst critic, depending on how much he likes it. And so he was also part of that creative process in that sense. So here we go again. Sorry.
That's okay. So the first production was at George Street Playhouse in New Jersey, and then you took it out and you took it out to the West Coast to the Village Theater out in Washington, state of Washington. And that was in, you know, George Street was 2011, Washington's 2012, and then
Right.
And was there much rewriting in between, Washington production and the Broadway production, or did you reworkshop it, or how did you do it?
Well, what happened was we had done the show at NAMT, which is, you know, I'm sure you know about it, the National Association of Musical Theater, and the season, I think it was 2010 or 2008, I can't remember exactly, but we had been a big hit that year at NAMT, and two theaters were interested in doing it, the Village Theater and George Street. And David, his schedule was free to do George Street, so he did that, and then we went out to the Village as a one-off. And the producers who had optioned the show for Broadway said, you guys are welcome to do the show at the Village Theater, and we won't have anything to do with it. It'll give you a chance to just go out of town and work on it. So that's what we did. David didn't direct it. A friend of ours directed it. We did make a lot of changes. We wrote, it's funny, we wrote this one song, which in the show is now Back in the Day. The song between the groom's father and the groom. And we wrote that song twice out at the Village. And neither one of those songs actually ended up in the show, even when we did it at the Village. we just kept the scene that the song was based on. And so we worked on that a lot. And we made a lot of changes and a lot of, you know, whenever you work on a show, you learn the things that are working, the things that don't work. And mm-hmm. we made the changes based on the production at George Street and the things we had learned from that. And so in answer to your question, it's a long answer to your question. Yes, we did make changes from Village. And then we made even more changes on the way to Broadway. One thing was we got rid of the intermission, which we had an intermission when we were at George Street and also at the Village Theater. And the Broadway producers were fairly insistent, but also rightly so, that we get rid of the intermission. And so in doing so, given that we'd added basically two songs to the show, we had to cut a lot of it to get rid of the intermission. Mm. So, that worked to our advantage in a way, because it meant that everything had to work at the top of its game. There couldn't be excess, basically, moments or scenes that didn't fit into with the telling of the story. And so in that sense, it was good for us. It was disciplined in a way. I was kind of, I guess the people listening, you might have told them that I worked in television for like mm-hmm. 10 or 11 years. And, one of the things I was looking forward to in the theater was not having to bring in a script at 22 and a half minutes.
Yeah.
And, I was looking forward to having a little latitude, a little, fun with character and stuff. I still had fun with character in the writing of the musical. I ended up cutting a lot of that to get to the telling of the pure story. So it was kind of great. I got to use the discipline of having written for television and making sure that every line counted, so that every line we learned something about the characters or revealed something, either about the plot or was a hint at where the turn was going to happen and all those changes. And so that was kind of great, actually, having that chance to work on it, also getting rid of the intermission and working on it that way.
So I looked back at the NAMPT website, and it says that you were in the 2009 season of NAMPT. But the interesting thing here is that I didn't realize that Lisa Howard was playing Jenny all the way back in 2009. That is,
did she do it? She did do it for NAMPT, didn't she?
Yeah, that's what the NAMPT website says.
We had another woman who basically quit the business, and I hope it's not this of our show, did the first reading of it. And then Lisa came in, and yes, once we found Lisa, we knew we had the woman that we wanted. I mean, she was, first of all, she's got an incredible voice, and she's so right for the part in that she is gorgeous. Well, she's model pretty, but you could also understand how, if you were her mother, she was not getting the kind of attention from men that the mom would want. In other words, she wasn't married yet. Mm-hmm. You would understand that how her mother would rag on her about it. So, and a lot of what that character is, I love the fact that she is beautiful and Lisa is beautiful, but in her mind, she's not beautiful. The character of Jenny's not, because that's the way she looks at herself. And I think all of us, even models, probably at some point, although I'm not a model, so I wouldn't know. But I know we all look at the faults in our bodies, and if those things are accentuated by our parents or what have you, that can make you feel like that you're not attractive. So there's that psychological thing going on with Jenny, and that was another reason why we loved having Lisa in it, because she was beautiful, but she didn't feel that way. And I think we can all relate to that. And Lisa has grown so much in the part. It's how she is watching her now. And even from when we did it, you know, at the beginning of the in premiere on Broadway in the previews, she has grown. The depth of the character, the moments, the way she plays with the lines and the subtlety, and yet it's not the same. She never does it the same way. It's always slightly different, and she's still playing her action, and she's still the vulnerable Jenny. Anyway, she's just fantastic, and she's gotten better and better and better. I wish we could go on for another year, not just so that we could go on for another year, but because she would be like Duza by the end of it, I think.
She had quite a performance on the Tony Awards.
Wasn't that great?
We were
really happy. First off, you can imagine that we, you know, getting the opportunity to do a song on the Tony Awards was we were excited about that. But then choosing what to do, we wanted to give everybody a chance to be seen on TV. But on the other hand, we knew that other shows, bigger shows, would have much bigger production values and had choruses with dancers and stuff like that. And we thought that what we should do is go simple with it and show, have Lisa do Jenny's Blues. And that's how that came. It was actually Barbara's idea. I kept trying to cut the opening number down, as you know, and the album's coming out soon, but like the opening number's like 9 or 10 minutes. And I kept trying to cut that down to the 2.5 minutes that the Tonys was going to let us have for the show. And I just, every time I thought about it, I got sick in my stomach because I just knew this wasn't right. Mm. And Barbara said, well, why don't we just do Jenny's Blues? And it was sort of like a light bulb in our heads and like, yeah, that's a great idea. And so that's how that came about. And thank God for it, because it really brought a lot of attention to the show. And, there she goes again. A lot of attention to the show. And for that first week after the Tonys, we did really well in terms of numbers. Of course, the week after that was 4th of July weekend.
Yeah.
And which is notoriously one of the worst weeks on Broadway, and we lost a lot of momentum then, and then we've been slowly getting it back, but never enough to go, okay, we can keep running.
So let me ask you a question about the audience. I feel as though the audience has been excellent at keeping the secret of the show. Sort of like the Crying Game when the movie came out, everybody's like, don't tell the secret because you don't want to ruin it for everybody else. Has it been hard?
Right.
Has it been hard to do promotions for the show without giving away the secret?
That is an excellent question. And I think that has been part of the problem in terms of getting the word out, because the show is much different. As you know, you've seen it. It's much different than you think it is. It's not about what you think it is, which is about two families that don't like each other, of different religions, not liking each other, and that's what the story is. It's not Amy's Irish Rose. Mm-hmm. And, you know, although some of the critics stopped there and didn't see beyond what we were doing, that part of it is only the first, 15 or 20 minutes of the story. It changes. And the subject of the musical are actually very modern and very current, and the ideas of acceptance and of all kinds, whether sexual persuasion preference. I think you might have to cut that out. Sexual preference or race or anything like that. All of those and religion is also all part of it, and that's the thing that makes it a very modern musical. But I think if you were just looking at it and not knowing about the twist and not knowing how the characters are much more complex than what they seem like at first, you might think it's just one thing. And that was made it difficult for us to advertise. So that was an excellent question, because that was part of the problem.
So the timing of it all, I mean, you had mentioned you've been working on it for 8 or 9 years, and we had some out-of-town out of town productions of it, and hitting Broadway in 2015, just as the country and the Supreme Court is changing on marriage equality. How, you know, you must have been over the moon about that.
We were, well, I wish you had been there that night, that the night after the Supreme Court for marriage equality, and it was like electric in the audience. And I don't know, you might have seen Time's speech, which was so beautiful at the end of the show. She didn't know it was going to be recorded either. She just spoke from the heart. And having had I think she mentions that in her speech, that she had a similar situation when she was when she was first married to an African-American guy. Mm-hmm. Her marriage was not legal in many states. And anyway, she spoke about that. And, you know, it was so current. And one of the reasons that that night was so special is because people realized they were in a musical that was basically riding the times, or slightly ahead of the times, really. It's important to know, and I don't know how much people will know about the story. I don't know how you guys talk. I guess you could talk. I don't know. Anyway, I'll just talk about it, and you decide what you what you think is appropriate to say or not. But for me, it's someone said, well, now that gay marriage is legal, how does that affect your show? It's like, well, it doesn't really affect the show, because it was always based on. The idea was always based on this one man, this one grandfather, who made it specific about his grandson. Mm-hmm. And so it's a personal, personal event in his life. And that kind of situation is going to be true. I think for many years to come, and maybe forever, because whenever anybody's the least bit difference, there's always a difference. There's always going to be prejudice, whether it's from strangers or people in a close knit family. There's always going to be acceptance and non-acceptance of people's lives. And so I think, I danced around that pretty well, I think. I'm not giving away, but I think you get my point, which is, this is all, I mean, everything about it. The song A Little Bit Less Than is about Rebecca talking, trying to coming to terms with where she is in the world. And one thing I've talked about before, which is, obviously I'm married to a guy, so that would make me gay. But it is one thing that I face, like, for instance, I'm on an airplane and I sit next to someone and they say, so are you married? Do you have a wife and kids? And it's like, here I go. I have to come out again. So, that used to be hard for me. Now it's easy, and I just get it right out, right out of the way. Because if they don't like it, then I don't want to hear that they don't like it. Right?
Yeah.
So I just tell them. I think that's what Rebecca. That's what the line means when she says, "Strangers you meet, friends from before." Step to the edge, that no one's going to hurt you anymore, and no one should stop you anymore. And so, so that way, it's actually a very personal, character-driven problem that keeps the show going, and also another reason why we weren't worried about not worried about marriage equality happening, and thrilled that it did happen. It made everything even better, and So yeah, I guess I sometimes I feel like I'm going way off tangent on your question.
No, that's okay. No, that's wonderful. Okay. No, it's
anyway.
Great. Do you know if there's any discussion about there being a tour or doing some select cities or anything for that?
Well, there's not going to be an official tour. No, MTI has licensed the show and they are very excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
They are my understanding is, they're like the best, or certainly one of the best. My lawyer said, hey, if they want to do it, go with them, even if they offer you less money. I can tell you that now that the contract's closed, because because they're like the best, and so yeah. we're excited, and they're very excited about it. And we've already, for instance, sold it to Argentina, so Argentina is definitely going to see it. And MTI may put a tour together or several tours together, but there's not an official Broadway tour that's going to happen.
Any talk of West End, possibly?
They have been talking about England. I think the English people would love it, because every English person that I've talked to that's seen it has loved it. And they really get the English people have really gotten the I can't say anything without bragging. So
brag. It's okay. It's quite all right.
No, they get the cleverness and the smartness. They get the cleverness of the way the story is put together. And the smart writing, of which it took us a long time to get there, but I'm proud of the script, and I'm proud of the show, and I agree with them. I think the way I told the story and the way the way it all fits together, especially once you know, if you came back and you would see all the times I've woven in hints and clues and how lines mm-hmm. often have double meaning, especially if you know what they're really talking about. And that's woven throughout. And I think the English would really, really like that. But, you know, I don't know. I thought the New York critics would like it.
If we knew the outcomes.
We were in preview. I'm sorry, go ahead.
We knew the outcomes, we'd be talking from our yachts, you know?
That's so true.
I mean, I can't tell you how, you know, some shows that I've really just gone head over heels for and loved just have been economic failures on Broadway, and shows that I still can't grasp the whole Mamma Mia thing. I just can't. So,
hey, I wouldn't mind having a Mamma Mia.
Oh no, nobody would mind it.
If you can let that. I mean, you know, it's fun. I had a good time.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, I think it's so funny because, you know, the previews, the audience was responding probably the way they responded when you were there. And we actually have not had a bad night. I mean, the actors, every actor will tell you that they have not had a single night where they went, what's wrong with the audience tonight?
Yeah.
And even Saturday night, which is notoriously a bad night for the theater because people have had lots to drink and, you know, they get tired halfway through. But we were having producers from other shows come up and say to our producers, congratulations, this is a hit. You guys are, they were very nice about it. And then April, I believe it was the 15th, came along, and it wasn't just tax day. That was kind of shocking. Mm. But, you know, that's it. You know, it is what it is. And I'm sorry they didn't get it. A lot of the critics later on got it. A lot of the, what I would consider some thoughtful people, and certainly a lot of writers and like that have come up to people in the show and talked about how much they liked it and everything. So
an original cast recording, not only is it great for posterity and to capture a moment, but it's also a great marketing tool to let the rest of the world know, you know, kind of what this show is about. And I think we'll help MTI market the show and get it into lots of regional theaters and perhaps around the world. So we should all be excited. The digital release of the original Broadway cast recording is going to be on August 21st, and the physical disc release is going to be on October 9th. So there's a little bit of 8 weeks in between. 6 weeks in between the digital release and the physical release, but you can get it on iTunes and Amazon and lots of different places and Google Play. So I really want to thank you for coming on and talking about the show, and it's really wonderful. We've been a big fan and supporter of the show, and we just hope you write another one and come back to Broadway.
Well, thank you. That's very nice. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, and I'm really glad you like the show, and we love doing it, and there's nothing but really happiness, and we've had such a good time. All of us, David, Barbara, the cast, Josh Rhodes, everybody has had a great time working on it. And Daryl Roth and Scott Landis and our other producers have been amazing. So it's been a terrific ride, and so thank you. And thank you for getting the word out. I appreciate that.
On Outside of It Should Have Been You, I was wondering if you could do me a little favor. Can you talk to David Hyde Pierce and see if he can host the Tonys? Because I would really love that.
Okay. I'll talk to him.
So
thank
what?
You.
Okay, thank you.
If I'm not that kind of girl, now I'm ready to give these a whirl. Better make no mistake. It's a new day. Give me a break or get out of my way. I've spent my whole damn life just waiting. Others danced while I just sat on the shelf.
Lisa Howard is joining us by phone. Lisa, Broadway fans will know as Jenny Steinberg, the sister of the bride, currently in It Should Have Been You. And she's joining us on her day off. Lisa, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
So our Broadway fans out there will know you from Priscilla, from 9 to 5, from South Pacific, from 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. But my goodness, I'm just blown out because of the of It Should Have Been You. I loved it. I loved you in the show. And what's it been like to develop a new musical on Broadway?
Especially this show has been very different and special for me. It's not that really the first time that I've done a new original musical.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Spelling Bee was new.
Yeah.
What, 9 to 5 was new. But this one, I had been doing readings of it and like a and other productions of it for years beforehand, which hadn't been the case with the other original shows I had done, you know. So this one had been kicking around for so long. It was, you know, every once in a while people would ask me, hey, what about that show you did, that reading that it should have been you? I was like, if when it happens, you'll know. Like, I have no idea. You know, it was just years and years that, you know, they think it was coming up and then not. And then the next year and then not, you know. So it was kind of great. I feel like each time I got to come back to the character, that, you know, I was able to grow in the character. And even as we work, even as we continue now from, you know, the beginning of rehearsals, you know, when we were rehearsing for Broadway through the opening, and even now I'm finding more layers to her. And so it's been a really neat process, and I love kind of growing into this.
It's got to be, you know, kind of an emotional roller coaster, as you said, the stop and go of it all. Maybe this season, maybe next season. How, you know, how's that been, you know, for you and taking on new members of the cast and losing old members of the cast?
Yeah. Although as an actor, you're kind of used to that uncertainty. It's just, I knew that this was a great role for me, kind of a game changer kind of role for me. So that's why it was, you know, a highly anticipated show that just seemed to never get here. But as an actor, you kind of, even with auditions, you go in the audition and it might go well, it might not, but you just kind of have to put it out of your brain, mm-hmm. or you could go crazy, you know, wondering whether you got this. And then, you know, it makes it more personal if you dwell on it like that. So even with this, I kind of just had to be like, well, if it's going to happen, it'll happen, and I'll find out about it then. There's nothing like, you know, nothing I can do, you know, because I'm not a producer. I'm not, you know, those people that make those things happen. And then you said something about, as far as like changing cast members and stuff too. Yeah, we have had one permanent replacement now. David Burka is no longer in our show. So it is kind of hard to, it's like losing, you know, like your older sibling is going off to college or something. You know, they're still there. It's not like they've died, you know, they're out there in the universe somewhere. So you miss them, but you know, they're okay and they're doing good. But yeah, so that's really been the only change within the show since we've opened. And it's, you know, a wonderful company, and we hate to see anybody go. And so we're kind of glad that we're all getting to have this little final last month, last hurrah together.
So who told you that you were going to be featured at the Tony Awards, and what was that like?
David Hyde Pierce.
Okay.
After the show one night, came into my dressing room. He said, "I have to talk to you." And I was like, "Oh no, I was terrible tonight. What did I do?" He said, no. He said, no. What would you feel if I said that they want you to perform Jenny's Blues on the Tony Awards?" And I was like, "You're kidding, right?" But so he was very happy that he got to, kind of share that information with me. And of course, obviously, I was thrilled. Kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Oh, it was so amazing. It was really amazing. I really loved it. But you must have been like, did you call everybody in the universe and tell them that?
No.
I would have. Come on. I gotta call your mom, of course. Well, no former theater teacher or something from high school that you said, "Hey, you know, I just wanted to let you know that this thing is happening. You might want to tune into CBS."
No, but I mean, you know, eventually you put it on Facebook and you feel like, well, if it's on Facebook, everybody will know, you know.
That's great. So, tell us about the process of the cast recording. How has that been for "It Should Have Been You"? Did you record everything already, or are you still in the process of it?
No, we did record. Basically, they get it all done in one day. Mm-hmm. And we weren't quite sure if we were going to have a cast album, because a lot of times they do it towards the beginning of the process, sometimes even before a show officially opens. But, you know, I think they were kind of waiting and feeling things out, and people kept asking us, "Is there going to be a cast album? Is there going to be?" And I was like, "We have no idea. You know, I hope there is." Mm-hmm. And then our producers, you know, let us know that there would be, and we recorded it a couple weeks ago, like 2 weeks ago. And they do it all in one day, start at 10 a.m. and go till however long it takes. I think we finished around 8:30 that night, and you have your call times, and you just go and you sit around and you do it, and the orchestra's there, and it's a really neat process. And it's just something special, because this lives on, and people, whoever's doing it in any community theater or high school or wherever, you know, like, they're going to listen to this, and theater fans, you know, it'll be forever. So it's really special. I was glad that they decided to do it.
Yeah, I mean, the cast recordings are really going to help push this show into many different productions, where people will say,
right,
"Hey, I'm going to do that Lisa Howard role. You know,
yeah,
this is what,
yeah,
I want to do." And it'll be
The cast recording will be an essential soundtrack to many weddings in the future as well.
all the
bridesmaids are getting ready for the wedding.
Something.
Lisa, how was performing after doing the recording? I always think of that video of Elaine Stritch recording The Ladies Who Lunch from that documentary, and I'm amazed that actors can do that in just one day and then go and do a show the next day.
Yeah, your voice is pretty tired, because, you know, doing 8 shows a week, you kind of need a day off. And then, funny enough, we did, you know, a week of shows. Then we did a cast recording, did another week of shows. And then I also, then that next Monday, rehearsed all day and then did the 10th anniversary concert of the Spelling Bee.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So I had another performance and then another full week of shows. So this is actually the first day off I've had in a long time. You can feel it in your voice. It's just a little bit more tired. But as a trained singer, you know when to push and when not. And, you know, it's kind of part of the skill of getting through an 8-show a week.
What was it like to revisit Spelling Bee after 10 years?
It was amazing. And it was like riding a bike. When we first, the first rehearsal where we kind of were just like reading through things, I was like, I don't even remember saying this. What? How does this scan this lyric? Oh my God. Oh my God. I was panicking. I was like, I don't remember anything. And then I had a music rehearsal and then we had one evening for a couple of hours where we staged some numbers. And then the day of the show, we kind of went through from the beginning and stumbled through. And by the time the show came that night, everybody knew, you know, all the lyrics were back. It was kind of like it had to be dusted off in the recesses of our mind. But we went in, I wasn't nervous. Like I had my script on the little, you know, desk. And for some scenes, people had their scripts in hand. But for the most part, it was just like we jumped right back on that bike and did the show. It was thrilling. It was great. And, you know, towards the end, as we're singing the final song, I got choked up. I got teary because I was like, wow, I don't know if this will ever happen again. I got it's like I got to, because the whole original cast was there, minus Celia Keenan-Bolger, who she was in the audience, but we had another Olive. But Celia, she just recently had a baby.
Yeah.
She has a newborn. And so I think she was like, this is too much for me right now. I can't be rehearsing and all this stuff, which I was like, please, I totally understand. I have two kids myself, so I get what those first couple months are like, you know, just so sleep deprived.
You're sleep just like, when the baby sleeps.
Easier said than done. But it was a magical night, and I'm so glad that we did it. And we raised a lot of money for the Phyllis Newman Women's Health Initiative and a lot of money for our stage manager, Spook, who had passed away from cancer. And we raised a lot of money for her family. So it was just a great evening all around.
Well, I mean, you do those things and you have to change gears to get back to It Should Have Been You. And also this on the heels of the craziness of opening a Broadway show, then going into the Tony Awards season. And the thing is, with most Broadway actors, they say, you know, you don't get to see any other shows because you're in a show and everybody's playing.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything.
And so you're one night off. You're always being asked to do some sort of benefit or some sort of concert or a reading or a workshop or things like that. So, are you taking it easy this summer?
As much as I can. I mean, not really. You know, it's
you have two kids to take care of.
I have two kids. I'm a fit model, so I still have my clients during the day. I do fitting.
Oh.
And then I go and do a show at night. So, I have been, since, you know, March, I have been a crazy, insanely busy person. It's my kids are like, do you have another show? Is today your day off? Poor thing. Oh. So they've been, you know, definitely missing their mommy.
How old are the kids now?
1.5 and 5.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. The 5-year-old.
Although, yeah, it's the 5-year-old. 1.5 is like, bye. You know, he loves to go to the babysitter. He's fine.
Yeah, he's like, I can roll over.
Yeah. But the 5-year-old is definitely taking it hard. Today I spent all day with them and took them to the Bronx Zoo. That was great. But you know, I try sometimes, like, you know, on a 2-show day, like, I'll take the bus home to Jersey, cook, you know, and make dinner just so I can have dinner with them and then go back in and do the show. But, you know, you try to find those moments that you can spend with them. 'Cause, you know, I'm working day and night. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, you know, it won't last forever. That's what I keep telling myself. It won't last forever. And sadly enough, our show is closing August 9th. So it'll be, you know, it won't be that much longer. I'm sad to see the show go, but it will be nice to have a little more time again. But, you know, well, that's the nature of show business.
You hail from Akron, Ohio.
Yep.
And, mm-hmm. And you ended up at CCM. So tell us, how was your progression from childhood to CCM to Broadway? Tell us.
I always loved singing. I started taking voice lessons at a very young age. I think in sixth grade, however old you are, when you're in sixth grade, 12 or something.
Yeah.
I did show choir starting in junior high, which is very big where I was from. And so, you know, that kind of gave me a love of performing, and I did my high school musicals. And then I decided that, you know, probably by my junior year of high school, that performing, this is what I wanted to do. And so then I started looking into college programs, and I didn't know whether I wanted to go into, you know, voice, like the opera world, because when you're first mm-hmm. studying, you study classical. But I knew I loved theater, so I ultimately chose going into musical theater. And CCM was, you know, one of the top programs in the country, and it was a state school for me to go to. So when I got in there, it was a no-brainer.
Oh.
I had auditioned for, I think, Indiana University mm-hmm. and, you know, a couple other places, but I was, you know, kind of setting my sights on CCM, not being too far away from home, but still one of the best musical theater schools in the country. And so that's how I ended up there. I was, you know, pretty focused. Once I decided I wanted to do it, that, you know, that was it. I went to school, I auditioned, I got in from there and went to CCM, and when you graduate from CCM, your senior class puts together a showcase, and we took it to New York, and from that, I got my agent right out of college, you know, before I even moved to the city, and then after we graduated, I got my equity card at the Muni in St. Louis.
Oh, nice small theater.
Small.
What did you do at the Muni?
Oh, I've done so many shows at the Muni.
What did you start with?
I was on a chorus contract, and I started, I think my first show was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I was, you know, in the ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that summer we did South Pacific and The Wizard of Oz. So I did those three shows that summer.
Outdoors and in front of 12,000 people in the heat and the rain and this stuff.
Oh, it's like summer camp. I still love working at the Muni. I worked there, I don't remember when, a while back, when my first son was just a little over a year, I did Legally Blonde there.
Oh.
I love working there. It's great.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people all the time that if you haven't experienced everything in theater unless you've been to the Muni.
Yeah.
I guess I haven't experienced everything yet.
No, you have to
get out to St. Louis to see that. And then you have, fans of yours can listen to your own album that you put out with the folks at Shikaboom and Ghost Life, the Songs of Innocence and Experience, and it's also available on iTunes. So how did you put that together before we wrap up?
Oh, sure. I had always wanted to do an album somewhere, you know, always kind of put it on the back burner, and when I signed on with my new manager, Jen Namoff, she kind of lit the fire under my butt and said, you know what, let's get this done, you know, let's do it. And it was always something I had wanted to do, and in trying to figure out, okay, well, all right, great, I want to do an album, but there's a gajillion songs in the world. What do I want to say? What do I want? And since I had since my, you know, debut into the Broadway community was in a William Finn show, and I had done in college, I, you know, was very familiar with his work. I had done Falsetto Land and Falsettos, and I had known William Finn from working down at the NYU Graduate Musical Theater Writing Program. I love his stuff, and so I thought, you know what, let me put together an album of Bill's stuff, because I love to sing it. I think he's a brilliant writer, and he has a lot of stuff that's well-known that's been put out on his own CDs, but then a lot of stuff that that isn't so well-known. And so my CDs are very eclectic mix of his material. But, you know, the only difference is I had all new orchestrations made. We have a 14-piece, you know, orchestra, mini band, if you will. But it was, you know, I was like, I don't want this to sound rinky-dink. You know, it's very lush, and they're all new. You know, some of the orchestrations are from Michael Sarabin, all brand new, and several other people had, you know, graciously helped me rework and reorchestrate songs. And so it was a huge undertaking, you know, recording, especially something like that where you're doing it, you know, full sound, full musicians, everything. It's, you know, it takes a lot, but I'm really proud that I did it. And, you know, I got help from people along the way, investors and friends who donated money to, you know, help me put it all together. And, I'm really glad that I have it and that I can, you know, say that I did it.
You don't get a chance to hear How to Make Delicious Chocolate very often.
No. and that's the thing. I love quirky songs like that. And the first time I heard it was years ago, and I heard Megan Lawrence sing it at a concert of Bill Finn's. And she's a genius actress anyways. And that it was years prior, and I was like, I love that song. It's so out there. And I was like, I love the arrangement. And I said, I will sing that song. So it's in thinking in, you know, in looking at interesting and unique William Finn songs, I said, oh, well, that definitely has to make it on my album.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of fun.
Well, I want to remind listeners that you can check out Lisa's work at lisahowardnyc.com. We'll have links to that in the show notes and on Twitter as well at lisahowardnyc. And check out her album at Shikaboom. And then we will have more information about It Should Have Been Used cast recording when it actually arrives in the stores. So Lisa, thank you so much for taking some time out of your schedule. I know how hard it is on your day off to give us some time.
No problem. My pleasure.
All right, thank you.
All right, have a good night. Bye-bye.
Who's more than talk? And when I give him back, he won't be able to walk. Yeah! Something extra and a great big heap of something.